वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले शिवभक्तवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नमने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणि प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पश्चात्चरेशतरणे Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Saraswati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 49 Verse 14 Sri Sukha Uvacha Iti Anusmritya Swajanam Krishnam Cha Jagad Ishvaram Prarudad Dukita Rajan Bhavatam Prapitamahi Sri Sukha Uvacha Itanu Smritya Svajanam Krishnam Cha Jagad Ishvaram Prarudha Dukita Rajan Bhavatam Prapita Mahi Sri Sukha Uvacha Ityanu Smritya Svajanam Krishnam Cha Jagadishwaram Prarudha Dukita Rajan Bhavatam Prapitamahi.
Bhavatam Prapitamahi. Sri Uvacha.
Sri Uvacha.
Ityam Smritya Svajanam.
Ityam Smritya Svajanam.
Krishnam Cha Jagadishwaram.
Krishnam Cha Jagadishwaram.
Prarudha Dukita Rajan.
Prarudha Dukita Rajan.
Bhavatam Prapitamahi.
Iti, as expressed in these words,
Anusmritya,
remembering
Svajanam,
her own relatives, Krishna,
Krishna,
Cha, and Jagat, of the universe,
Ishwaram,
Supreme Lord,
Prarudat,
she cried loudly. Dukita, unhappy. Rajan, O King, Parikshit, Bhavatam, of your good self. Prapitamahi, the great grandmother. Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, thus, meditating on her family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe, your great-grandmother, Kunti Devi, began to cry out in grief, O King. Text 15. Both Akura, who shared Queen Kunti's distress and happiness, and the illustrious Vidura, consoled the Queen by reminding her of the extraordinary way her sons had taken birth. Purport, Akura and Vidura reminded Queen Kunti that her sons were born of heavenly gods and thus could not be vanquished like ordinary mortals. In fact, an extraordinary victory awaited this most pious family. Text 16, the ardent affection King Dhritarashtra felt for his sons had made him act unjustly towards the Pandavas. Just before leaving, Akura approached the king, who was seated among his friends and supporters, and related to him the message that his relatives, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, had sent out of friendship. Text 17, Akura said, my dear son of Vichitravirya, O enhancer of the Kuru's glory, your brother Pandu having passed away, you have now assumed the royal throne. Purport, Akura was speaking ironically, since the young sons of Pandu should actually have been occupying the throne. Upon the death of Pandu, they were too young to immediately govern, and so were put in Dhritarashtra's care. But now sufficient time had passed, and their legitimate rights should have been recognized. Translation, Sukadev Goswami said, thus meditating on our family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe. Your great grandmother Kunti Devi began to cry out of grief, O King. So as we have seen in other places of the Bhagavatam, Kunti Devi is very eloquent to express her devotion to Krishna. In the first canto, she has a whole series of very famous prayers in which she addresses Krishna. And here also, she is expressing her devotion to the Supreme Lord and also her affection for her own children and the dangers they have under the rule of Dhritarashtra. And so she is praying to Krishna, please, you are the protector of everyone, so you should protect my children. So this, of course, is a natural tendency of a mother, that she wants to have her children protected. It is also natural for the Supreme Lord to do so, because Krishna regards all the jivas as his children. They are his amsas, or his parts. And he is very, very merciful to all the jivas. And he is especially merciful and kind to his devotees. And he will show great affection for his devotees, as Krishna expresses in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm neutral to everyone, but I am very dear to my devotee. I have great affection for my devotee. So, therefore, the Supreme Lord should be expected to respond to his devotees. And of all the forms of God, all the different avatar forms, etc., Krishna is considered to be the most merciful. He shows more mercy than anybody else, in spite of the fact that God is the most merciful. Different forms of God show different degrees of mercy. Krishna is regarded as the most merciful of all. So that, of course, is demonstrated in several ways in relation to his attractive nature. Why is Krishna so merciful? And that is related to his very form and his very attractiveness. So it is said, of course, that as one of the qualities of God, among the 64 qualities, that when God kills the demons, when the Supreme Lord kills the demons, he elevates them. They don't necessarily get liberation, but at least they get elevated. So these are among the 60 qualities. The 64, or the last four qualities are a little special, but among the 60 qualities of God, this is one. When he kills the demons, he doesn't send them to hell, but he elevates them. So Rupa Goswami gives an example to show that Krishna is a little special because he does more than elevate the demons. So he gives the example of three great forms of the Lord who are called Purna Avatar. So, of course, all the avatars are perfect, but they display different amounts of qualities and powers. So, therefore, some are classed as less powerful, such as Hamsa and Danvantari and Mohini and Rishabhadev. And those ones are considered less powerful. And we don't hear too much about them. There are some short descriptions in the Bhagavatam of them, but not too much. On the other hand, some are more powerful. So we have Matsya and Kurma and Varaha and Lisa. But actually more powerful than all of those are a special category, including Narasimha, Rama, and Krishna. They're considered to be the Purna avatar, the most complete of all the forms of God, and they display more powers. Then he explains that to show that Krishna is supreme, he shows how Narasimha and Rama and Krishna acted in relation to demons. So when Narasimha was fighting with Hiranyakashipu, then of course Hiranyakashipu fought back, and he was fighting very valiantly. And Krishna killed him, or Narasimha killed him. And what happened to him? Huh? Then he was born as Ravana. He didn't go to hell, he didn't get liberated, didn't go to Vaikuntha, but he got another body and he got great powers and opulence again. So he got some sort of punya, we can say. He was born as another great king and he could enjoy very nicely in this material world. So that was the mercy of Narasimha. But when he fought with, Hiranyakasipu fought with Narasimha, he actually did not recognize him as the Supreme Lord. He just saw him as a powerful entity, and I will try to kill this person. He could be Vishnu, it could be anybody, but I will try to kill him anyway. Yeah? So I didn't have any respect for Narasimhadev. But he somewhat admired his powers. Hmm? Then, and he was born as Ravana, and then he fought with Ramchandra. And when he was fighting with Ramchandra, then he thought, oh, this Rama, he is also some great punya. He has done great punya to become such a powerful king, but I will try to kill him anyway. Huh? Of course, Ramchandra has a very beautiful form, and he has some sort of sweetness and attractiveness. Narasimha is basically very powerful and ferocious, but Rama has a human-like form, and he's quite attractive. But still, Ravana, when he was fighting with him, still didn't recognize him as the Supreme Lord, and he didn't constantly think of him or anything. He was only thinking of his own enjoyment in this world. And then he fought with Ramchandra, and Ramchandra killed him. And he did not get liberation. He did not go to hell. But again, he became a great king, and he got some material enjoyment in this world. So he was born again. He became Shishupala. So what happened in that life is that Krishna was there, and Krishna became his enemy. He also really didn't recognize Krishna in the beginning, but he was constantly thinking of Krishna when he was sleeping and waking and eating and walking and everything. He was thinking, what a rascal this Krishna is. A big cheater. And he was thinking Krishna, 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 Krishna all the time. So why was that? Why was he thinking of Krishna all the time? Why was he chanting Krishna's name all the time? Because somehow Krishna was very attractive. More attractive than all the others. So he was the constant meditation of Shishupala. And he was constantly chanting his name. Now, of course, we know the name is very powerful. The name of Krishna is very powerful. So he was chanting the names of Krishna, which are very powerful. And in this way, gradually, because of this constant thinking of Krishna and chanting his names and cursing him, he gradually became purified, in spite of the fact that he was actually regarding him as an enemy. He was still, the name was so powerful, and the thoughts of Krishna were so powerful, with a constant absorption, gradually his karmas began to get annihilated. And then, of course, finally, Krishna took a Sudarshan chakra and raised his chakra and threw it at him and cut off his head. And then, what happened? He went to the spiritual world. He did not go to get another birth in the world. He did not become a demon. He did not go to hell. He did not become a pious king in the next lifetime. He did not even get liberation. He went to the spiritual world and got a spiritual form. Rupa Goswami explains there that by his constant thinking of Krishna, because of Krishna's extra attractive qualities and form, he became the object of constant meditation of Shishupala, and Shishupala began to get purified of all of his karmas. And then, when the Sudarshan Chakra hit him, then he was finally, everything was finished, all of his material life was finished. He realized the Supreme Lord, and suddenly he developed prema. So that is the special mercy of Krishna in comparison to all the other forms of the Lord. He is very, very attractive and very, very merciful. So therefore, Shishupala went to the spiritual world. Of course, there's an argument that, well, Shishupala and all these people were simply Jaya and Vijaya who had been cursed and came down to the material world anyway. So they were supposed to go back to the spiritual world after three births anyway, and Krishna came and just liberated them. So it's not real liberation in one sense, because they already were liberated, because they were from the spiritual world. The answer to that is so in our particular, this particular story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this particular day of Brahma, it is so. However, Rama and Krishna and Narsimha appear in every day of Brahma, in their particular yuga cycles. And Krishna appears in the Vaivasvatamana 28th cycle, the yugas, and Narasimha appears early, and Rama appears in the 24th cycle, Vaivasvatamana. And Narasimha appears in the, Chakshusha Manvantara, Chakshusha Manvantara, which is a long time before. So every day they appear. So it's not every day that Jai and Vijay fall in the spiritual world and come into the material world. It's not every day, otherwise they would most of the time be gone from the spiritual world. So it's not every day that this happens. Usually it's demons that take these roles, real demons. So only exceptionally do Jaya and Vijaya come from the spiritual world. So therefore in other cases, Krishna takes them back to the spiritual world. That is a special mercy. So the same we see with other, Agasura also went to the spiritual world and got Sarupya. He also got a spiritual form. And Putana also went to the spiritual world. She got a spiritual form as well as a nurse, in some sort of Vatsalya Rasa. So Krishna is very special. I mean, even the other avatar forms, when they kill demons, do not show such great mercy. So this puts Krishna in a very, very special category. He is most merciful of all the different forms. So because Krishna does display more mercy and more wonderful qualities, more beauty, more attractiveness, more sweetness, more of everything than all the other forms. Therefore, we say he is the source, he is Swayam Bhagavan, he is Avatari. Which does not mean to say that the other forms are not God and not perfect, but his display of powers and qualities and sweetness and mercy is more. And therefore we put him in number one place. So therefore Krishna is naturally very, very merciful to all of his devotees in the material world. However, when Krishna is in his pastime, sometimes it doesn't look like he is the most merciful. So we see the Pandavas had to go to the forest for so many years and they were suffering very, very, had a lot of problems. And when they were in the palace and Duryodhana was always attacking them and making plans to have those children killed, and Dhritarashtra didn't do anything. He didn't protect them, and this is Kunti Devi's complaint. They were there and they were unprotected, even though Dhritarashtra was supposed to take care of those children and raise them up to become, Yudhisthira was supposed to be the king, but they didn't do that. And so Kunti Devi's lamenting. So then we say, well, what is Krishna doing? Why isn't he so merciful? He's merciful to his devotees, so why doesn't he protect his devotees? They're in this situation. And in the first canto there, Kunti Devi's praying. And even Bhishmadeva says the same thing, that, you know, Krishna is very merciful and everything, but we don't really understand what he's doing. We cannot understand his plan. It is very difficult even for us great devotees to understand what he is doing, but sometimes it is so perplexing to us. He seems to disregard the devotees. So we cannot always predict how Krishna will show his mercy and how he will act. Yes, yet he is the most merciful of all the different forms of God. God is merciful in any case, but Krishna is the most merciful. And so similarly, we also see the case with Krishna leaving Vrindavan, and he leaves and he says, I'll come back, and he doesn't come back. And then all the devotees there are dying in separation from Krishna. And we would say he would just come back in one day and say, okay, here I am again. But he doesn't, and he leaves them, and he goes away. So then the gopis say, you are the most hard-hearted lover. You're cruel. You're the worst person. And they start attacking him, calling him names. We know you're not coming back. You're the most evil person. You're attracted to the women of Mathura. You're never going to come back. So we shouldn't have fallen in love with you at all. They think Krishna is so cruel when he leaves and he never comes back. So these things are very puzzling even for the devotees. Why does Krishna do this to us? Why does he leave us like that? So yes, it appears like this. And for a materialist, yes, they can criticize Krishna. And they will say, yes, Krishna's like this. He's not actually so merciful after all. He's famous for being merciful, but he's famous for not telling the truth and lying and doing so many other things. And look at what he did to the gopis and the people, and mother and father. He left them and he didn't come back. And he tricked them. He said, I'll come back. And he didn't come back. So materialists can have a very good time of criticizing Krishna for all of his bad qualities. So yes, that's true. Krishna does give opportunity for all of this. And last night someone was saying that yes, Krishna is advising Bhima to hit the legs of Duryodhana. That's why you can kill him like that, and to attack Karna when he's trying to get his wheel of his chariot out of the mud, and when he's not defending himself, then you shoot him then. So why does Krishna do all this when he's supposed to be instituting Dharma? And then he breaks all the Dharma laws and encourages Arjuna to do the same. So people can criticize Krishna like that. So of course Krishna also is, in one way, is when he appears, his sarup itself is such that Krishna is called Manushya Rupa, or human-like in form. Of course, Rama is also human-like in form. Say, Vamanadeva also is, and others are also. But of all the different forms, actually, Krishna is the most human-like. Of course, he has human form like us, and size is the same, almost. And his qualities also are very similar. So he is so bewildering in his qualities that he appears like a human being, not like God. And even you can see imperfection, like you see imperfection in human beings. So he will also show that for people, and people will become bewildered. He looks too human-like. He has a birth, he disappears, he grows, and it appears he also makes mistakes like everybody else. So very bewildering because of this. Even Brahma became bewildered by Krishna. And even though Brahma knows that Krishna appeared in this material world because he gave the message to the Devadas, the Lord will appear, and when the Lord appeared, everybody celebrated, the Lord has come, and the prison house of Kamsa and everything, so they all know he's the Lord. But yet Brahma forgets. He's so bewildered by the way Krishna acts as a cowherd boy, taking lunch with his friends, because he expects God to be, like Mahavishnu or Garbhadaksha Vishnu, very formal worship. And when he sees Krishna, a little boy, running around the fields with the cowherd boys, throwing food at the cowherd boys, and they're throwing food at him, then he says, how can this be God? It's not God. It's just a little boy. So Krishna acts like a human being, and he doesn't always show his powers and his qualities in the same way as others. This, of course, becomes a matter of attraction for his great devotees, but sometimes it's very bewildering for everyone. So it's bewildering for the gopis. They, of course, don't accept Krishna as God anyway, but it's bewildering how he leaves and doesn't come back. And Kunti becomes bewildered. Why isn't Krishna saving us from this situation here under the Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and all these people? And later on, they had to undergo the problems and exile, etc. But this is all part of Krishna's lila with his great devotees. All of this is with the great devotees. These are all Nityasiddha devotees, the Pandavas and Kunti and Gopis and Nanda Yasoda and the cowherd boys. They're all perfect devotees. So that it's got nothing to do with the material world. It's Krishna interacting with his devotee. So therefore, all of this is lila. It is pastime. And ultimately, lila means for enjoyment. But this looks like it's suffering. So this is actually not real suffering. It is part of the bliss. And that's explained by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the later part, that sometimes in that bliss, in the spiritual world and also in the material world, when the Lord comes, something appears like it's not bliss. So when Krishna separates himself from his devotees and they suffer, it appears as if everyone is very unhappy and suffering. But we cannot take this as material suffering, because those devotees are absolutely pure.
So it cannot be called material suffering. So that's why in the spiritual world and in the spiritual devotees, we have some rasas which appear not to be so much happy. We have fear, this bhaya rasa, which is a fear thing. And we have lamentation, karuna rasa, shoka, and one laments like this. So it looks like negative rasas in the spiritual world also. So we can think, well, what's the difference between the material world and the spiritual world? We lament down here, sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're suffering. Spiritual world, they have ananda, and they also have karuna rasa, where everyone is suffering also. So what's the difference? So that there is a difference. And all of that, of course, these secondary rasas in the spiritual world, like bhaya and krodha and shoka, they are called secondary rasas or guna rasa. That means secondary. So it's not prominent. The dominant theme is love. That is, shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya. And that's very positive, full of bliss. So the secondary rasas appear temporarily. But they're also all related to Krishna. Everything is related to Krishna. So therefore, these secondary rasas act as a little variation in the love. That's all. So the lamentation of separation is part of the bigger experience of bliss. And though there may be some lamentation, it always comes to an end and it turns into greater bliss. So it's not that the lamentation continues forever. No, there's a short spell, and then Krishna comes back, and then there is bliss, more bliss. So the bliss increases. So in this way, there is an arrangement of the Lord. So what appears to be distress is actually a part of the bliss. And Vishnu Chakravarti describes in the Bhagavatam also that though Krishna separates himself from his devotees, for instance, he separated himself for 3 months from the Vrajavasis when he went to Mathura. And he separated himself for some time. Even then, even in their separation, Krishna is merciful. So because of that intense separation from Krishna, then Krishna actually appears within them in one form. That's called spurti. And that is somewhat satisfies them, because that appearance within those devotees, in their minds, he appears. And he satisfies them in that way. Nevertheless, the devotees always want to see Krishna in person, not just in the mind. So Krishna also satisfies that. So even in relation to the Vrajavasis, Vishnu Chakravarti says, Krishna did not go longer than 3 months, and then he came back. He's not going to stay away for 100 years or whatever like that. But even then, there's an appearance that he was away 100 years or whatever, and then he came back. Of course, some people say he didn't come back at all. It doesn't look like he came back. But then Vishnu Chakravarti says, yes, he did come back. And this is described in the Padma Purana. So after he killed Dantavakra in Mathura, then all of his demons, he had finished killing all the demons. And then he said, now I can go back. And after that, he didn't kill any demons. So he went back to Vrindavan after that and stayed with the Vrajavasis. So there is some separation from the devotees, and there is some pain involved, but it is all part of a spiritual rasa, all of this, for the heightening of the joy of the devotees when Krishna again appears. So therefore we shouldn't think that this distress is material distress at all. It is in relation to all the pure devotees. So this way, Krishna still is most merciful, and simply to increase the feeling of bliss, therefore sometimes there are periods of separation, there is feelings of lamentation, etc., and being insecure, having fear, etc. So this is the situation here of Kunti Devi, where she's in great distress because her children are being harassed by the Kauravas and Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and all his brothers, 100 brothers. And she's saying, where is Krishna? Krishna should save us. So, of course, Krishna knows everything and he has a purpose. And Of course, it is a long time. The Pandavas have to grow up, they have to get exiled, and then through it all, this Krishna gives his advice, and finally there's a battle for Kshetra, and Krishna talks to Arjuna and tells him, you have to fight anyway, when he's going to back out of the fight. Then he tells him, you have to fight, and then Arjuna fights, and the Pandavas win. And then all of the Kauravas, all the sons of Dhritarashtra are finished, nobody's left, and they're on the throne. And Krishna is there with them at all times. And of course, later on, he has to protect Parikshit. Guess he's the only remaining son, so he protects him. And then Parikshit here is talking to Sukadev Goswami afterwards, and he's the only remaining person. And it was all under the protection of Krishna. And then Parikshit hears the Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami and hears all about Krishna. So this is all Krishna's arrangement with his devotees for certain purposes. And definitely we cannot really understand that. Even the great devotees have difficulty understanding all of these activities, how Krishna's leelas work. It is full of suspense for everybody. Until the ending happens, nobody really knows. And finally there's a resolution, everything resolves, and Krishna appears, and all the problems are solved, and then everyone's happy again. So there is all sorts of excitement in the middle part, and then at the end there's great, great bliss. So this is how Krishna's leelas take place. But when it's happening, then the devotees may feel have all sorts of feelings, all variety of feelings. And this is part of the rasa. There's this great variety in the feelings. It's not just constantly one level of bliss. No. There's all this mixture. And that's what creates rasa, the mixture of all the different tastes in there. Example is given, of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita of yogurt. And then if you start mixing it with sugar and camphor and black pepper and everything, and then it develops a different sort of taste, more attractive taste, because there's the subtle taste in there. It's not just yogurt. The sweetness of the sugar is there, and then there's the camphor, makes it cool, and there's the black pepper, which makes it spicy, etc. So there's a certain variety in the taste. And the same with all cooking. If it's only sweet, it's going to be very intense. So that if it's sweet, then there's always some other flavor in there also. So you have the spices in there, and the sweet, and then you may have the ghee in there, whatever, and the grains, and it makes a certain thing. Or the sweet rice, then you have the milk flavor in there also, along with the sugar, and then you have the grain there also, and then you have the spices. So it's not just sweetness. There's a mixture all the time. So in all the different love relationships in the spiritual world, then there is also some variety there. All sorts of emotions. But it is all concentrated on Krishna. And the feeling of surrender to Krishna is never absent. It's always there. So that we see in Kunti Devi, even though she's seeming to complain a little bit about where is Krishna, whatever, she's completely surrendered to Krishna at all times. And her faith never, ever wavers. In spite of the fact that she's saying, where is Krishna now? Her faith in Krishna never in any sense, you know, decreases at all. She has that constant faith in the Supreme Lord. So it is natural, of course, for the devotees to feel that Krishna is their protector. As we know, the one of the aspects of surrender, six qualities of surrender, one is that one feels that Krishna is one's protector, Lord is one's protector, the Lord will protect me at all times. So if there is any danger, then the devotee says, oh, Krishna, save me. So that is not a material sentiment. We may think, well, this is, if we shouldn't pray for anything from Krishna, but even Jiva Goswami says in relation to the definition of bhakti, Ani Abhilashava Shunya, he says that actually if you say, oh Krishna, please protect me, then that actually, we can't consider that mixed bhakti. It's not mixed bhakti. It's natural for the devotees to pray to the Lord, please protect me. And of course, it's not a constant thing that you're praying every day, protect me, give me money, give me this, give me that. It's not like that. It is an occasional thing when there's great danger, then one will say, Krishna, protect me. So if that happens, that is not a, it can still be called pure bhakti, uttama bhakti, because it's natural for the devotees to think of Krishna as a protector. So these devotees here often pray like that. Oh Lord, you please protect us. You are the savior of everyone, and we are in a very miserable, distressing position. So this is the position of Kunti Devi here. Okay, any questions?
It says Sayuja, but then Rupa Goswami says Sayuja can mean simply meeting, or and not that you have to merge into them literally, but one joins. And it can also mean embrace even. So that's how he translates the word Sayuja. And of course we do know that after the third, also even in the case of this case, that when they were killed, they went back, Jaya and Vijaya went back to the spiritual world. So they didn't actually just merge into the from personal Brahman.
Describes that he's merging
into
the body of Krishna.
Yeah, Sayuja. Yeah. But then that's what Rupa Goswami says. Sayuja doesn't, it can mean that, but he says actually. That means he joins him in the spiritual world. I suppose you get this. Did he become Kumbhakarna?
Kumbhakarna.
And then he was killed by Rama also. And I guess he became what? Dandavakra. Yeah, Dandavakra and Shishya follower, Jaya and Vijaya.
You see here, as you mentioned, that Kunti Devi, she's always Nitya Sita, and here she's praying Krishna, please give me protection because the skins are harming me.
Yeah.
And in the first canto, we see after the war, the kings are all killed, enemies are killed, and here Kunti is praying, let the suffering come back again. It was good that the kings were giving us ransom.
Yes, okay. Oh, because in that sense, let us have that lila again, because again we'll get to associate with Krishna, and he will do something for us. He'll protect us finally, and we'll get that bliss of, you know, seeing him perform his pastimes. So in one sense, it is suffering. All that suffering is there, but because one gets Krishna as a result, therefore it's not suffering. Our separation from Krishna? Or
also in the material world.
When we're separated from what? Material material pleasure?
No, from our dear ones, and so what is this rasa meant to teach us?
Oh, well, in the material world, our separation from family members, etc., we have to take that as material.
Material.
Yeah. Our separation from Krishna, that's another thing.
That's
So often... it is explained that yes, in the material world, the devotees are even more separated from the Supreme Lord than those in the spiritual world, because we can't see Krishna directly as sadhakas. You know, when we're practicing sadhana, we don't have direct vision of Krishna. But that separation also acts as an impetus for us to meet Krishna. So we can also, in one sense, have that feeling of longing and separation from the Supreme Lord, and when we finally meet him. Even in the eternal pastimes, there is, for instance, the Pandavas didn't meet Krishna actually until after he went to Dwarka. So they were, when they were born and everything, they were hearing about Krishna, and they were also in separation from Krishna because they wanted to meet Krishna. They wanted to meet Krishna, but they never saw him until a certain point in their lives. So they also experienced that sort of thing, even though they're Nityasiddha devotees. And then at a certain point, they saw Krishna and they were satisfied. So. Even they experience it to some degree. So the sadhakas also can have such an attitude. Of course, we're not on that level of intense love, etc. But that separation itself acts as some sort of impetus. So we see that in the case of Narada Muni, for instance. The Lord appeared once and then said, I'm not going to show myself to you again in this lifetime because I want you to increase your
you know, feeling of love and your attraction to me. So therefore, I'll separate from you, and you'll become purified by that separation. So that acts as an impetus, also separation. And also with when Krishna had the Rasa Lila, and then he called all the gopis. Some gopis got locked up in the rooms by their, husbands or their in-laws or whatever, and they couldn't go to the Rasa Lila. And then it says they gave up their bodies. So obviously they can't die in one sense, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti says that actually what this means is that they were on the verge of perfection. But they were not absolutely 100% pure. So therefore they could not actually join Krishna. But therefore they were not allowed to go. But because of that separation from Krishna at that time, and their feeling of separation from Krishna, that intense longing for Krishna, that burned up the last impurities in their heart. So they gave up those bodies, and they attained spiritual bodies at that point. So that's the meaning of they gave up their bodies. They actually got spiritual bodies at that point. And then afterwards they were allowed to go to Krishna. So that separation does do this. It actually, when it's very intense, then it burns up the last impurities also. I don't think Narayan doesn't have any Vatsalayas. I don't think, is it? just as she went to the spiritual world and she had some sort of, it was like a mother. So it was more like a nurse. So some form of the Lord. So there are different forms of the Lord who are like Rama, as like mother. There's a Vatsalya there with Rama. And with other forms of the Lord also there can be to some degree, again. So in that way there can be. Or even with Krishna in other places, they can act as parents, like Vasudeva and Devaki and Dwarka. And they have a Salya Rasa, but they're not the same as Yasoda and Nanda. Doesn't say, actually. No, just that she was became like a mother. Yeah.
So in the spiritual world, when deities and the individual Krishna, is they experiencing through, does he grow there?
No. No, he only is in Raja in the spiritual world, Vrindavan in the spiritual world, he's Kishore age, which means he's about between 8 and 12, kind of in that area. And he doesn't grow. So the idea of him being a baby and growing in that one form, that's a particular aspect of his pastimes when he comes into the material world. Nevertheless, when he's in Kishore, that Kishore age is considered the most perfect age because all the different devotees can see him in the particular form they want, even though he's that old. Mother Yasoda can still see him as a small baby and treat him like a small baby, even in that Kishore form. And friends can still think that he's 8 years old or 6 years old or whatever, because that's the ideal age for Sakyarasa. So all the different devotees there can still get great bliss from that form of Kishore. Whereas if he's a baby, then there's no question of Madhurya Rasa at all there, or even Sakya Rasa. And only when he's a little bigger then you get the Sakya Rasa, and only when he's Kishore you'll get the Madhurya Rasa. Yeah, Manvantara, yeah.
Just a question is that how is that the Simanchala where Shivadev appeared and then they can explain the whole pastime in that region, even though this pastime took place.
Where in Ahobala, you mean? In Ahobala?
Ahobala,
yeah.
Whereas in Krishna appeared only 5,000
years.
And nearly everything got disappeared until Krishna
So how is it possible that something from Chakshusha Manvantara, which is about over 71 yuga cycles previously, which is 4 million times 17 years, and there was a flood after the Chakshusha Manvantara also, a partial devastation took place as well, so somehow, by the inconceivable potency of the Lord, these places can remain.
Yeah.
I don't know actually what it doesn't say actually. It was just in the palace of Hiranyakasipu, I suppose, wherever the palace was. He of course conquered the heavenly planets and all this, but whether he was actually living there when he appeared, I don't know. Usually we take Prahlad as appearing here on this earth, so I would assume then he also appeared on earth. And of course they do claim that in Andhra Pradesh, because they have his appearance place and everything, in his palace and whatever. Now of course all these avatar forms, though they appear here, they do have planets in the material world in different places. And they have their own particular lokas where they live, some above Brahma Loka, and some on Tapo Loka, and some below Patala Loka, and Sutala Loka, and various places they have their own abodes, which remain as long as the material world exists. When that dissolves, still they have their abodes in the spiritual world. And those abodes remain, so Yamasya and Kurama and Varaha and Shrima and all those forms in the spiritual world as well. So they have eternal abodes there too.
And you know, I just talking about in the first part of the 10th canto that there's certain intimacy about the Sakya and Krishna's pastimes on the earth. And Prabhupada mentioned that there are different universes in which the intimacy is greater, so that Krishna displays more in the pastimes.
What's that? Yeah.
And Krishna is apparently having more intimate pastimes in different universes, and that the ones that are some very
Well, of course, Krishna has we have a description of Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam, and of course, not everything is described. It doesn't give it all the details of all the pastimes. It gives us a general way in which pastimes take place, and in the spiritual world or in other universes, there's always going to be variations. Not only Krishna, but all the different avatars. So it's a general; they all appear within the day of Brahma like that, and they generally have pastime like this, but there's going to be variations all the time in those pastimes. So sometimes they'll be more violent, sometimes more intense, sometimes more sweet, or whatever. There can always be variations there. So we can never say that there's only one, one set standard. There's always going to be some variations there. So you can have more intimate pastimes here or there, wherever. Okay.
Yeah, there's separation of Lord Chaitanya for
Yeah.
Will it always be like that? Like, how do we establish Krishna in our mind or in our heart? And does he start to become more prevalent through that mood of separation, or is it chasing him and desiring him?
Well, that's one way, of course, because Lord Chaitanya did display that mood of separation from Krishna and in the mood of Radha, who, in other words, that Mahabhava displays its qualities in separation. That's when Mahabhava displays itself. The greatest ecstasy of love displays itself in separation.
When you said when they went to Mathura, Vrijavasi's had it in the mind, in the form of
Mahabhava. Yeah. So they developed Mahabhava then, definitely.
That great separation.
Yeah. And that's what Uddhava saw also when he came back. The gopis in separation, when there's the bumblebee, when Radharani is talking to the bumblebee, that's all part of this Mahabhava. Yeah. So that's, of course, we cannot imitate that, but that gives us an idea of the height of ecstasy in the spiritual world when Lord Chaitanya comes, and he displays that.
So can we stay in that mood of separation and we develop, we're in that mood of separation and try and develop that?
In a certain sense, because we're sadhakas, we are separated from the Lord, so we can display that sort of separation. We're separated, and we want to actually meet the Lord and serve Him directly. Yeah? But of course, it may not. It may be in Madhurya Rasa. It could be in other rasas also, not necessarily that rasa. But they all experience separation. So Nandini Yasoda and the cowherd boys also have Vipralamba Rasa. They don't call it Vipralamba there. That's particularly for the Madhurya Rasa. But they do have separation also.
Of the five primary rasas, where do you feel Srila Prabhupada because he always signed himself as a humble servant. And of course he was much, much more so.
Well, there's a controversy in ISKCON. Some people say that because he wrote a poem in which he talks about the cowherd voice, and of course even Sri Jagirti was saying he was sometimes describing his pastime with the cowherd voice, and he says this is very nice and whatever. So that's what some people say. Other people say it's Madhurya Rasa, so we don't, it's hard to say.
What relationships needs to have with Nishringadeva? Is it simply a protector and protected, or is he more involved there?
Usually the rasa there is also dasya rasa. Yeah. With Rama, then we get a little more expansion of that. Rama is considered greater than the others because usually the lesser forms, other forms that are lower than that, that's basically dasya rasa also. And when we get to Ramchandra, then there's a little bit of Sakya Rasa, and there's a little more Sakya Rasa, and a little more Vatsalya Rasa displayed with the parents and things like that. We have Vatsalya Rasa, and we have Sakya Rasa with his brothers and other people. And we have Dasya Rasa and whatever. So we have, and then of course we just have Madhurya Rasa, only one with Sita. And then with Krishna, then we get more varieties of those rasas. Of course, this 64 is kind of a general term. But if we look at Ramchandra, then he has more sweetness in the Vishnu forms and the other avatar forms. More sweetness there because a little more intimacy there. And therefore, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami puts Ayodhya Dham above the other Narayan Dham, puts it above. So there is a little more intimacy there in the relationship. But still, I would say there is sweetness there also. But not that he doesn't play the flute, he doesn't have the full display of rasas that Krishna has, and the same types of devotees and intimacy, because they also know Ramchandra's God. One thing is there is more display of rasas in the other forms, but at the same time, they still think of him as Supreme Lord, as in Dwarka form of Krishna, something like that. Okay.